Squadron leader David Ware, Real One. Could you tell me where and why you were born, Mr. Ware?
13922 in Mersey Island, Essex.
And could you tell us a bit about your family and your early childhood? You sort of
we are interested in have five brothers and sisters, and we were all born in different places. But my parents lived in Hyde Park Square in London. My mother then, when I was born, they rented a house in Mersey Island, Essex, and she had the baby there. But they were, my father was at that stage in the salesman. He ran rather a high-class shop in Regent Street. And but then he went bust during the Depression, 1930.
So it was a rather comfortable upbringing, at least at the start.
At the start, yes. But father was Plymouth Brethren, or had been a member of the Plymouth Brethren. And he set his own... He didn't believe in the Church of England. He believed in the church, his own church, which he was creating, which he had some brothers who joined, young businessmen who joined him. And that was in 1930. And then we all moved from East Grinstead, where we were then, down to Alfriston, including the brothers. They were called brothers because they were, to me, they were brothers, they were brethren.
And you moved to Alfriston?
Alfriston, in 1930.
Where's Alfriston, sorry?
Alfriston is a very famous village in Sussex. You'd be a bit, Sussex, you were very insulted, you didn't know where Alfriston was. It's between Eastbourne and Brighton.
Did the religious atmosphere, I mean, did it permeate the whole of the family life?
Oh, absolutely.
Did it affect you a lot?
Oh, yeah, it was dominated, because when after father went bust, there was no more finance except for what was available from my mother's side. And therefore we went from riches to rags, so to speak, and lived a very frugal life, and a very hard life, I think, for my mother, too, because there was very little money.
What about your education?
Well, education started basically at Neville House Prep School in Eastbourne, when we used to travel by bus from Alfriston. And I went there in 1930 to 1936.
And what do you recall of that? What was it like as a school?
Small, a lot of fun, very middle class. There was a battle in those days not to allow shopkeepers' sons in. And I think that life was financially difficult for the school, so they started to let these boys in. And I was the first generation where we had boys who were locally, and parents were locally involved in shops, because shopkeepers were not sort of just considered to be gentlemen. So it was a pretty right-wing setup in a way.
And this was your prep school.
Yes, I was at prep school for 30 to 1936.
And then your next school?
Eastbourne College. Moved up to Eastbourne College, a minor public school. I say minor because that they rather tend to judge themselves, public schools.
And what about your education there?
At Eastbourne College? Good. Very good. And good at sport, and good bench of sport. It was good 4 years, very nice.
Was there any particular subject you enjoyed or were good at?
No, none, really. I mean, we were in, every year had three forms, so A, B and C. You were put into one where you were best at. I think maybe geography and history were my best subjects. Certainly not mathematics, and certainly not languages.
Was it a school that balanced one way towards the people who were educationally successful or the people who were sporting successful in sport?
I would have thought both, but I mean, sport was. If you were good at sport, you were put in that sporting class. If you were academically good, then you were in that class. I was in the sporting class. I was not in the academic class at all.
Which games did you play?
Rugby, up to the first 15, and tennis. And the school tennis team, college tennis team.
Now, I believe you had some success at tennis, didn't you?
Yes, I mean, well, not. I mean, I was not very good. I was average, I think, average. I could cope with sort of competitions and things like that, like the junior championships and things like that. But I never did very well at them.
Now, was there an OTC?
Yes, there was.
Were you a member of it, or was it?
Well, this is an interesting part, really, because my father was a pacifist. He was a conscientious objector during the First World War and ran a restaurant place and guards barracks down at... where's the guards barracks? Down the South London area. Therefore, when we went to school, both my brother and I were not allowed to enter the OTC. So we were Boy Scouts from the age of, when I went there, 13 to the age of 16, I think it was. Then all my friends moved off into the OTC, and I was moved into Senior Scouts, which was a slight embarrassment. But it was never discussed at all. It was never discussed at all. But my father also briefed the housemaster. When the war started in 1939, I went to the housemaster and said, "I'm going to want to join the OTC." He said, "Well done, boy." I was into it without any permission, without any knowledge of my family.
Now, were you not of their belief about... You weren't a pacifist yourself, obviously.
Oh, no.
You didn't share those beliefs.
No.
Did you think it through, or was that just...
No, I wasn't a great thinker through. I was a sportsman, and I liked girls, and I enjoyed my beer, and I wasn't what you call a thinker.
Now, can you tell us...
So, therefore, I didn't emotionally get involved in all the teachings that used to go on.
What about... can you tell us a bit about the Boy Scouts activities? Because, you know, there's a military aspect to the Boy Scouts as well. What sort of thing did you do with them?
Well, I mean, the first phase in Junior Scouts is, you know, getting your medals and your ribbons and going to camps and things like that. We used to meet once a week. And the same when we went to Senior. The only embarrassment to me was that all the Senior Scouts are much older boys than I were, because they all come out of the OTC and had done their OTC journey. But, no, I didn't... I can't remember too much about being a Boy Scout, except we used to have nice uniforms and used to have to get medals or pass so many tests to qualify for these medals. And, I can't give too much emphasis or remember too much.
Were you very aware of the approach of war, of what was going on with Germany, Hitler, the rest of it?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. But, I mean, everybody talked. The family talked about it, the father talked about it, mother talked about it, the masters talked about it. And being in Eastbourne, right on the south coast, that, they were always sort of basically worried, I suppose, that, you know, they would have to go at some stage.
Do you remember the day war broke out?
Yes, absolutely. I was in Fife, Picardy 5. And I was 17 on the 13th of September. So it was just before my 17th birthday, and we were told my father was there visiting some religious friends of his, and we, the children, were chased into the garden and told that we weren't allowed to listen to the radio when Chamberlain made the announcement about the war. And so we listened outside anyhow.
And you were up there on holiday?
On holiday, then we drove back to the Lake District, then back to Halifax, back to Eastbourne.
And what were your impressions? I mean, you know, what did you feel, you know, about the outbreak of war? Did you think it would involve you? Was it important to you?
Yes, I think so, yes. I mean, I'd already decided I was going in the Air Force anyhow, because of the fighter we used to see from Tangmere and Biggin Hill and places like that. But,
so you were keen to get involved?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Now, tell me about what happened when you were asked to join the OTC. And what sort of activities you did with the OTC?
Well, I mean, I just went to the housemaster on when we got back to school on about the 10th of September 1939. I went to the housemaster and said, look, by that time I was house prefect and I was in the first 15. I said, just, I'm going to join the OTC. And he said, well done, boy. And I was in and nothing more was said.
And what training did you do? Can you run us through what sort of training you did with them?
Lots of marching, lots of field activities with rifles. Yep, mainly rifle training.
And how realistic was the training, would you say?
Well, we were firing blanks, except the time we had on the range, and that was always limited because there was only so much space available. But it was realistic, yeah.
And you enjoyed your OTC period?
Oh yes, it was nice to be back amongst one's friends, and I think, I can't really remember what we thought at this stage, because it was the phony war, and I'm not sure that, and we were 17, and we were enjoying our rugby, and we had girlfriends. I'm not quite sure we give too much sort of thought to the war, but we were quite conscious that the war was around us, and I think we were quite conscious that we were going to be called up.
Now, so what effects did the war have? I mean, did you start to lose masters or senior boys to the forces?
Well, I was only there 1 year of the war, and that was from 1939 to June 1940, when Eastbourne College evacuated to Radley. And the whole of the south coast evacuated. My family put themselves on a bus and went to the Lake District. And I became a boarder.
You went to Radley?
Radley.
In Middlesex?
No, Radley in Oxford, just south of Oxford.
Sorry.
And not a minor public school.
So the school went to share?
We were evacuated, yes. All schools were just told to leave. And normally there had been some negotiations. I think the headmaster had been deputy headmaster at Radley, and I thought that's the reason, I think, why we went to Radley.
Radley College.
Yeah, Radley College. And we all went in a train, literally with 48 hours' notice. And I do remember one thing that I found eerie was my mother had left the house keys with me, and she asked me to go and check, before I left, the security of the house, which I did. And it was a day before we were leaving, and I cycled up to the house and feeling very frightened and very nervous, and that the Germans were coming, because the Eastbourne was suddenly absolutely dead. There was no one around. It was silent. It was the houses all locked up and people had gone. And you had that's the first time I think that war really had an impact on me, that I realised that we were into the action, really. We were evacuated.
And that was September 40?
No, it was not. June 1940.
June 40, yeah. Sorry.
No, God, they were, by September, Eastbourne, you couldn't move for concrete and iron bars and...
Now, when you got to Radley, you were sharing, with the boys that were already
yes,
there.
Yes.
How did the school sharing work?
They didn't. They had their own... The programmed the classrooms from early in the morning till late in the evening. So the Eastbourne College had so many slots and the Radley boys had so many slots. So we never were interlinked either socially or
So all you
academically.
Shared were the premises, but you didn't actually meet.
So we didn't act that way. We shared studies. I shared a study with a Radley boy. That's about as far. But back from the work point of view, we shared nothing. From sports, we didn't share any. We played each other, but we always had been playing each other in here. But it was... And we were into uniform, and we were into LDV, Local Defence Corps.
Tell me about the Local Defence Corps. Was this the OTC joining that, or how did it work?
The OTC joining the LDV, Local Defence Corps. LDC. I've got the badge somewhere. And we used to go up to the Abingdon Oxford Road and lie in ditches with our guns and ammunition. Because in this stage, of course, they thought there could be a German invasion and we were going to shoot paratroops. But the only real shooting and noise we ever got to was drunken Air Force officers going back from Oxford to Abingdon, pissed out of their minds without their lights on. I remember stopping one car, it was quite amusing. They just told us to go and get our nappies on. But that's what we were doing. And then I finished at Radley in June of 1940. I was 18 in September
1940. I thought that's when you were evacuated.
June of 40. We were evacuated.
When were you? When did you finish that?
In Radley at July of 40.
So you were just there a month?
Yeah, a bit long. I think it was a bit long. I think probably 6 weeks. It wasn't very long. I can't remember the actual daylight that we went from Radley. But we finished in end of July, and then I went to join my family in the Lake District.
Whereabouts?
Seascale. Which is not really the lakes, it's Cumbria. Seascale, near where the... Well, you know where Seascale is now.
And what were you doing down there? I mean, had you left school?
Well, I mean, yes, it was end of summer term, and I wasn't going back, and it wasn't discussed. I don't think there was the money to go back. It wasn't discussed. And I decided to join the Air Force on the 13th of September 1940, the day I was 18.
So you're just back with the family, really, till then? Not really
We did. No, my brother and myself worked on a farm.
Tell us about that.
At Seascale. Well, it was all right. I mean, because it was the hay season. The first part was doing potatoes, which is absolute hell. I don't know if you ever picked potatoes. That is hell. Back-breaking and boring and monotonous and hot weather. But then we moved on to haymaking, which is much more fun. You know, working the horse, cart horse, and working the loading up the hay and unloading it. That was good. We paid 15 shillings a week. And that was good. That was a lot of fun.
And how were you recruited into the... How did you volunteer to join the RAF?
I didn't tell anybody. What I did was I had a friend staying nearby who'd been evacuated, and I used to go and visit him, so I told my parents I was going to visit him. But in fact... Instead of getting off at Whitehaven, I went to Carlisle, went into the first-time three-star hotel, the County Hotel, checked in, because I had a bit of money by this time I'd saved up, and went down to the bar, and there were dozens of sergeants in Air Force uniform, and I had a ball with them that night because they were yearning to fly just outside Carlisle. But on the 13th September, I went down to the recruiting office and signed on.
And what was the procedure? I mean, because most people get funneled straight into the army, whatever they, you know, the recruitment is a way of doing that.
If you volunteered for air crew, I think you came into a separate category. Even later in the war, if you were in a, we'll come on to that, and even if you were reserved occupation, you volunteered for air crew, you were in. But I was a volunteer, and it was 1940, and I don't think conscription had come in yet. I mean, I had never received any papers, and I don't think conscription was in for another couple of years.
Now, what was the procedure? I mean, how did they assess you? Were there any sort of tests?
I walked in and filled in forms, and no tests whatsoever. I mean, they took number, gave me a number, and gave me a rank, AC2. And said, right, you go home now, and we'll hear from us very shortly, and you'll then go down to Padgate. Padgate was a major Air Force centre.
And now, the one big problem that lay in front of you before you went to Padgate was your parents.
Yeah.
How did they react?
They didn't know. Only one member of the family knew. The only problem we had was when the Air Force were going to send me notification and the letters go to Padgate, that on it would be OHMS, and they'd see my name. Therefore, the idea was that no one would know. So the only person I told was my sister, my eldest sister, and myself. We were always at first at the post to collect the mail, and until my letter finally arrived, and then we went back to normal. So then I got a letter from Save Report to Padgate, warrant and all concerned, paid for, and again I told my family I was going to stay with my friend, and off I went down to Padgate.
So they didn't know?
No.
Why had you not told them? I mean, it seems fairly obvious, but if you could just express it for us.
I think it was pretty deeply religious sort of background, and it was, I wouldn't say fair, there was very little communication inside the family. Especially on the war. I'm not quite sure how to answer this one. Really.
You tried to avoid a row, were you?
Oh, yes. I didn't want them to know. I wasn't in at this stage, although I had a number, but I wasn't in. No, I think it's just how the family operated in general. You either believed what father said and got on your knees and bowed and prayed, or if you didn't, you went your own way, and I went my own way.
Were you religious at all?
No.
So you completely missed out on that
side? Yeah. Now, I mean, I had all the religious background, choir and training, but I wasn't in the religious sense. Are you saved, boy? Was a great sort of thing they used to go in. Are you a Christian? Are you saved?
And the answer was no.
Well, crusaders and things like that. And a bit, I must admit, coming back to Eastbourne, was that our doctor, right from the word go, was Dr. The murderer, the man who committed in about 1760s, were head up for murdering old women in Eastbourne. Bodkin Adams. He was our doctor when we were in Alfriston. He was our doctor when we were at Eastbourne. And also he was a religious man, or said he was, and his basement was used for crusaders. Now, we had to go to crusader class every Sunday afternoon.
And crusader class was sort of the young brethren, or,
yeah,
or whatever they were called.
Yeah,
that's what they were, is it?
Yes. But they had a sword, and the sword was the Bible. And, if I was cheeky, I'd say, well, you used to say, don't cut me down, but they didn't enjoy that sort of humour.
Now, you had to report to Padgate. When did you have to get to Padgate?
I think I went to Padgate on 1st of October, 1940.
And what was it? What was the name of the unit at Padgate? Do you remember, or was it just the reception?
It was what were they called? Padgate RAF Reception Centre. Arrived, and you all arrived and given a hut to go to. and given a bit of paper to a unit to report to in the morning.
And did they kit you out at Padgate at all?
No. No. They were. I was up for aircrew, and therefore I was going through the aircrew selection board. They had an aircrew selection board at the Padgate. And next morning I started on through aircrew selection.
And tell me what that process was.
Well, many interviews, and written tests. But if you said you have school certificate or something like that, no. I don't remember too much, except the interviews. We had definitely had interviews.
What were the interviews about then?
About whether you played rugby and whether you were good blue eyes and liked to be a good officer. I had all those qualifications.
There was a social class element to it then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But
so someone from a northern grammar school would not be so likely to be to pass the test.
I think by this time, no, that wasn't apply. I think no. You know, I think that that didn't apply back by that stage. No, I think especially grammar school boys. I mean, the only thing they were concerned is you had enough academic ability to get through the course.
Right,
and if you hadn't. And you played rugby, they thought that was a good replacement. And the people who interviewed us were old First World War pilots. I remember the man sitting there with all his First World War medals on. And I didn't do too well at my interviews. And he said, he said, you play rugby, and you're the sort of fellow we want, and you'll be a good pilot. I said.
Why did he think you hadn't done too well?
Well, on the tests, I think that I thought I hadn't done too well. But well, I did. I suppose I didn't really know. I mean, one doesn't. One was the one I was most nervous of, and I think everybody was most nervous, was the test on colour blindness, because none of us ever really didn't understand what colour blind was. And then you knew you were going in front of a guy with lots of books, and he used to thumb these. Well, here part of the what happened at Padgate was that. Interview for colour blindness, and also medicals took place. They stripped you down and looked at you and made you cough and made sure you were fully fit for aircrew, especially eyesight and ears and things like that.
So these were really serious tests.
Oh yes, it was. I think it started. I think it was 2 days, one full day, and the interview on the second day by the officer. To say you were in or not. Then he said, right. He said, you're going to have a waiting period. And what will you do with your time? Do you want to join the Air Force as an AC2, or do you want to do your own thing? I said, I want to do my own thing and join the Forestry Commission. Very commendable, boy, very commendable. Well, actually, I did. I went back to Seascale, and we moved to Keswick. And there I got a job with the Forestry Commission, which was very enjoyable.
What exactly were you doing for the Forestry Commission?
The first stage was marking pit props. I had a measure and all the trees were lying on the ground. Behind me were the poles they were working on, Czech-Czechoslovakian immigrants working on piecework. And I had to measure up, make sure I kept ahead of them by just twigging a sharp knife, which made a cutting into the wood. And then, but the next stage was sniggering, and sniggering was going up in the hills with a couple of guys with horses and pulling the trees which had been felled to where they used to slide down, and they used to slide down to the bottom. And then again they were picked up and then measured for pit props. But it was very exhilarating and very exciting. A, because it's the first time I was brushing with anybody who'd suffered the war, because the Czechs had all been... They lived in one big house with their families, and they were all immigrants. I mean, they were all come out of Czechoslovakia.
And how long were you doing this for?
Till I was...
That was October 4th.
Till I got... By this time, I knew that the Air Force had told me approximately that they were going to be in touch with me in March. And they were in touch with me in March, saying to report to Torquay in May the 10th, I think.
17th of May is 17th, on here. But
17th of May, that was on.
So you were doing it a long time. The 6-7 months.
Yeah. Well, right through the winter.